Thank you for listening to the Following Films podcast. Today we have one news item, a weekend box office wrap-up, and an interview with Stefan Bristol, the director of the new film Breathe. So first up, let's look at a potential merger between two streaming companies. It seems like once every couple of weeks, a new round of potential Hollywood mergers pops up, and this week we're talking about streaming. So it looks like Paramount is in discussions again. This time, they're talking to Comcast. And so this hints at a potential collaboration that could see the union of Paramount Plus and Peacock. So we might get one streaming service that would have Yellow Jackets and The Office, I guess, would be the big things there. Maybe Nickelodeon for some people and wrestling and a couple other, I think they have soccer on Peacock. And there's a couple of sporting events that are on Paramount also. So I guess the pulling of all this together could maybe make this one a more of a must-have streaming platform as opposed to a nice-to-have, or what do they have on that thing anyway? I've personally subscribed to Paramount Plus and Peacock in the past, and they're both subscriptions that I allowed to lapse. It's not that they're, there's more than enough on there to dive into Paramount Plus or Peacock, but really there's nothing there that makes it something that you have to go back to. There's no original programming, or I guess for some people, watching The Office over and over again, or for me, Parks and Rec might be something that would be a draw. But it's I'm not sure that they have that real hook yet for people. And maybe with this and Nickelodeon and everything all together, it could be something that does become undeniable for people. So the proposed partnership also, it draws parallels to a successful Sky Showtime model that was deployed in Europe, integrating Peacock, Showtime, Paramount Plus, and Nickelodeon across 22 markets. And now in the US, we have Paramount Plus has already been bundled with Showtime, so I believe this would be pretty similar in the offerings. So having this in a singular app does potentially lead to cost savings that could make this enticing for customers. And not that long ago, Apple and Paramount also explored the possibility of bundling their respective streaming services. That collaboration was looking at leveraging Apple's technical prowess with Paramount's extensive library. There hasn't been any update on that one in a little bit. Not sure that there's really any movement there, but that would be a pretty exciting one, considering Apple really hasn't found that in for people that makes it one of those must-haves. It's something that they turn out incredible content. They have really good originals, but it just seems like nobody I know actually subscribes to Apple TV Plus. So meanwhile, there is interest in Paramount from industry titans such as Warner Brothers Discovery. I cannot get used to saying that. It's just Warner Brothers, but Warner Brothers Discovery and Allen Media have fueled additional speculation. Comcast's entrance into the merger discussions, though, coupled with reports of Skydance Media's interest in acquiring Paramount, it's added layers to the story. And Paramount reportedly turned down an all-cash bid from Apollo in favor of exploring potential talks with Skydance Media. So in recent developments, Paramount has taken steps to revamp its board. This is a strategic move aimed at attracting potential suitors. The studio under its current management appears ripe for acquisition at a steep discount, having seen a significant erosion of shareholder value over the years. So stay tuned. I'm sure there's more to come in the coming weeks and months on this one. Now let's get into the box office wrap-up for the week of April 19th. So this week, the release of Abigail, Universal's Abigail, it underscores a notable trend in film scheduling. Being the first new horror film after a dry spell, that can be advantageous. However, with Abigail failing to meet expectations with a $10.1 million opening, the reverse sentiment seems to hold true as well. So this marks the seventh wide release in the horror genre over the last 8 weeks. So I'm a horror fan. I love seeing horror in theater at all times, but we might actually be oversaturated for the one genre that seemed to be reliable. And especially with a studio like Blumhouse that has been historically reliable for success in genre films like this, and with the pedigree that Abigail brought to the table, it just fell short of expectations. And this allowed A24's Civil War to maintain its top spot, with only $11.2 million in the box office, and that was with a 56% drop. So overall, the box office struggled to reach close to $66 million, highlighting a recurring theme this year, with this being the fifth sub-$70 million weekend out of the total of 16 weekends. So this downturn is particularly striking compared to pre-COVID-19, where weekends of this scale were unheard of. So two other new releases aimed to inject vitality into the box office are Guy Ritchie's The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, which surpassed expectations with $9 million, and the anime Spy X Family Code White from Sunny Crunchyroll with just under $5 million. It collectively fell short of Civil War's opening from the previous week. So while Civil War started strong with $25 million, setting a new opening record for A24, sustaining this momentum is essential to the film's overall success. The film's 56% drop in the second weekend could signal challenges ahead, so we'll definitely keep our eyes on this one. So give a quick rundown of the box office top 10. In 10th place, there was The First Omen with $1.7 million, Monkey Man with $2.2 million, Dune Part 2 brought in another $2.9 million, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire brought in $4.4 million, which was just enough to inch it over the $100 million mark, bringing its total cumulative run in the domestic market to $102 million. Kung Fu Panda 4 brought in another $4.6 million. Spy X brought in $4.8 million. The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare brought in $9 million. Godzilla Kong brought in $9.45 million. Abigail brought in $10 million, and Civil War brought in $11.2 million. So let's get into my interview with Stefan for Breathe. The film is a heart-pounding thriller set in the future, with incredible performances from Jennifer Hudson, Mila Jovovich, Common, and Sam Worthington. In the film, after Earth is left uninhabitable, due to lack of oxygen, a mother, Maya, played by Hudson, and her daughter, Zora, are forced to live underground, with short trips to the surface only made possible by a coveted state-of-the-art oxygen suit made by Maya's husband, Darius, who she presumes to be dead. When a mysterious couple arrives claiming to know Darius and his fate, Maya tentatively agrees to let them into their bunker, but these visitors are not who they claim to be, ensuing in mother and daughter fighting for survival. Breathe is in theaters this Friday, April 26th. I hope you enjoy the show. Thanks. This episode of the Following Films podcast is brought to you by Bookmans. So today, I went into Bookmans and decided to try to find a film by Michael Mann. I went over to the Blu-ray section and saw copies of several films I already own, and then I found it, Black Hat. This is one I haven't seen in quite a while since it came out, and I figured maybe it was time for a reassessment of this much maligned film. So Black Hat is a cyber crime thriller directed by Michael Mann that delves into the world of cybercrime, hacking, and international intrigue. While it promises to be a gripping exploration of the dangers lurking in the digital age, the execution falls short of expectations. The film follows convicted hacker played by Chris Hemsworth, who's temporarily released from prison to help the American and Chinese authorities track down a criminal network that's responsible for a series of major attacks. As the hunt takes them across the globe, Hemsworth's character must navigate the murky waters of the criminal underworld while grappling with his own demons. One of the film's major shortcomings is its lack of technical accuracy and realism. While it attempts to portray the world of hacking authentically, it often falls into cliches and inaccuracies that ultimately undermine the credibility of the story. So the hacking sequences are exaggerated and unrealistic, relying more on flashy visuals than genuine technical expertise. And this is coming from an absolute layman. I am not somebody who knows anything about hacking, and yet I can see some of the things that just flat out aren't true in this film. And that particular disconnect may disappoint viewers familiar with the subject matter or looking for a more grounded portrayal of cybercrime. So despite these flaws, though, Black Hat does have its moments. Michael Mann's signature style is evident in the film's beautiful, sleek cinematography and the signature action sequences, and the international setting adds depth to the narrative. It highlights the global nature of cyber threats and the challenges of international cooperation. Chris Hemsworth delivers a solid performance as Hathaway, bringing the character a sense of depth who's grappling for redemption. And the supporting cast includes, I had no idea, I'd completely forgotten this, but Viola Davis, who's really great in the film and adds a lot to the film. But ultimately, Black Hat falls short of its potential. While it offers a glimpse into the world of cybercrime and espionage, its lack of technical accuracy and reliance on cliches detracts from the overall experience. And despite its flaws, fans of Michael Mann's work or of the cyber thriller genre, I guess if you're a huge Johnny Mnemonic fan and you're looking for some more cyber thriller, you could do worse than Black Hat. However, for those seeking a more realistic, nuanced exploration of hacking and cybersecurity, this might leave you wanting more, and I'm not sure I can recommend this one. But despite that, this gave me the chance to check out a film that I've been meaning to reevaluate, because I keep hearing that Black Hat is an underrated film, and maybe I'll give it another 10 years, follow back up with this one, and see if it does end up coming around for me. But remember, Bookmans, they have your cool covered. Hope you enjoy the rest of the show. Thanks.
Hey, Stefan, how you doing today?
I'm well, sir. How you doing? Thank you for having me, man.
Dude, no, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. I really, really appreciate it. I live in Tucson, Arizona. We don't get a ton of rain here, but last weekend it was raining like crazy. And so whenever it rains, I can't help it. There's two albums I go to. It's Kind of Blue or Love Supreme. It's one of those two records I have to put on whenever it rains. And so this weekend I put on Love Supreme because my wife wasn't really familiar with it. So I threw that on and just it put on the box set and it played all day. So it was nice to see that continued through the week through your phone.
Thank you, man. No, I'm you know, I love I grew up listening to jazz. My father played jazz often in the house. You know, so Miles, you know, and Coltrane was definitely in the house and whatnot. So, you know, I had to put that in my film, you know, because we, you know, it's a family that, you know, that wanted, actually, let me step back. I wanted to make sure that if there is an end of the world, right, what is something that we would treasure? And I want to make sure that we treasure, you know, jazz.
Oh,
and Coltrane is one of the ultimate, you know, well, folks that we need to treasure.
That was one of the things that I really, and, you know, not to just be, that was actually one of the things that really grabbed me about this film, was that I've thought about that. You know, you kind of have that, whenever you see a post-apocalyptic film, there's an idea of wish fulfillment. What would I do in this scenario? How would I handle this?
Right.
I always get bummed out the idea of what would I do with art? How would I find, because it's not just the creation of art, it's the consumption of art is so much a big part of my life, that being exposed to different ideas and thoughts and, you know, understanding different time periods through the art that was made in that, you know, era is so important to that. And so when you lose that, I think you lose so much of your humanity. And to see that really focused on this, that resonated with me. I really appreciated that.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, man. Now you got, like, you know, someone always told me what albums I would take to me if I was on a deserted island or something. It was like, one of them was Love Supreme, another one was definitely Kind of Blue.
Yep.
Actually, when I was in college, I always wake up listening to Kind of Blue, but also it was The Blueprint by Jay-Z.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
You know, definitely Erykah Badu's Baduism.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then one last is an album by Sade. So, you know.
I don't know because Sade very well.
Because if I go on an island, I'm not taking myself alone. I'm taking myself with a lady.
See, that's what I assumed. And it's the that could either work out or make you really lonely if that's one of the five records you have. So, but talk about the idea of taking this two genre films, right? Sort of three, actually, where you take a post-apocalyptic film, a home invasion film, and really a family dealing with grief, and you kind of overlay all three of these on top of each other. And really, this is just a story about grief, I think, more than any of the other genre elements here.
Beautiful. Yeah, that's very beautiful. That's very, very beautiful, because I read the script from Doug Simon on The Blacklist, and I was just captivated by his way of telling the story of just trying to just grab our attention so much. And like, what the hell is going to happen with this family, right? And when I came on, you know, talking about grief, one of the challenges on the script was to understand the through line of Zora's character and what they're going through. You know, because the anchor for me on the script, it was about, you know, making sure that we have something beautiful that we leave for our next generation, which comes from a beautiful Native American proverb that goes something like, we don't inherit the earth from our ancestors, we borrowed it from our children, right?
Yep.
So we took that concept and made sure that we anchored that theme around Zora, the protection of Zora. And Zora really misses her father. And what does that mean to miss that parent during this time? So it was like a lot of tweaking with the script to make sure that the protection of a character is really leaned on the attachment of losing such a loved one, you know, in grief. I've never been, you know, thankfully I never loved, I haven't lost my parents,
right?
You know, so I can't relate to that, but what propelled the story forward a lot is through her grief.
Oh, absolutely. And I think we can all, if you haven't been through it or not, you know, I lost my dad last year. That's something that I think you can, while you don't completely understand it, I think you do get that idea of, we've all lost somebody, and you've all had that moment where you get a thought pops in your head and you're like, oh, I need to call them up and talk to them about that. And they're like, oh shit, there's not going to be somebody there when I call. And it's just that moment when you wake up and you don't realize that that person is gone, or that thing, you know, it could be something, it might not even be death. It could be grief of a relationship. You know, you were calling out to your partner, you know, that you lost, and you're like, oh, it's not appropriate for me to reach out to them anymore.
Right. Oh yeah, man. So, I mean, I felt that way when my grandmother died.
There you go.
Five years ago. The most, like, I was releasing my first feature film, at Tribeca Film Festival. And a week prior to that, you know, actually a year prior to that, my grandmother was going through dementia, so she was really losing her memory. So by the time my movie about to release to the world, my grandmother passed away. You know, I was like, whoa, this is quite interesting. You know, it was weird. Like, I didn't cry or anything. I didn't feel bad about it, because, you know, she lived a very long life. She was in the 90s when she returned to the ancestors.
Yeah.
And she was in pain. So I was quite happy to see that she was transitioning. So it wasn't, but it was still weird, for me to, experience a loved one that's so close to me to go away. Everybody else, it was funny, because even my mother to this day keeps talking about it, you know, that kind of attachment, it's something that you can't shake off. I don't know, you know that you have to try to grieve and move on, but you can never shake it off. You know, I experienced that with breakups.
Oh yeah.
Especially, yeah, you know, you just can't shake it off, you know, like you just have to move forward, but it's like, damn, like only if it's always there.
Well, I don't think that healing means that it goes away. You know, you can stop bleeding, but there's always going to be a scar there. There's a part of you that will always be marked by your relationship with this person. I think that's more common. It's just, you know, as you go along, that's part of the human experience. You collect more scars throughout life. But I know we're getting short on time here, but I got to tell you how good the casting here is. You know, it's just you from top to bottom, everybody that's in this film, it's not just your main characters that are real, and they're both incredible. Cause if you don't believe this family dynamic, the whole film doesn't work. But you also, I mean, it's the people that come in, the interlopers, the people that show up. It's just so, I mean, you did something with Sam Worthington that I've never seen him do before. And he has the face of a leading man, but I think the soul of a character actor. And he just does some really like juicy work here, man.
No, Sam, we let Sam rip. Like Sam came in with his own ideas, and he showed me, he gave me ideas to show me things that that no one thought about. Not me, not producing with the writer, because the script was one way. His character was very predictable. Sam figured out how to make his character very unpredictable. And so all that, that was Sam's idea. He came in and said, "Hey, listen, I have an idea for you. How you feel about this?" So I was like, "Whoa, go ahead." You know, saying that's the kind of actors I love. You know, I mean, Mila, Jennifer, they all, you know, all give that to me as well. You know what I'm saying? But talking about Sam real quick, that's the beauty of working with an actor, because a director, you know, a director wants that kind of commitment, that kind of show you something a little different. And I needed that.
Well, so, he brings, it seems like on reading this, and I haven't read it, but I assume.
But let me tell you something. He does far worse. You know, my director's cut, he goes a little too much.
you had to pull it back in a little bit.
I had to pull it back in, but I love him. He was fun. He got to roll around the dirt. You ask him to do anything. He was willing to go far from us.
Well, he brings that a calmness to a character that on the page is clearly, I assume, unhinged, but he brings this like steady hand to it.
The page, he was not unhinged.
Oh, really?
Lucas, his character was very, that's what I'm trying to tell you. On page, the character is very astute.
Okay.
So the cracks. Sam took it as, this guy is crazy, but with the moment he's about to crack, he's very astute.
He reversed it. Oh, it's so good. It's
like, even, yeah.
Yeah, that's brilliant, because it's the exact opposite of what you would normally do. That it's just, now it's time for me to lose it. I can be myself, which is so much more unnerving. That's when he finds his calm. It's just, it's wonderful.
Yes, exactly. So when he's about to lose it, he is like, you never thought he was crazy, which makes it crazy.
Exactly. But I know we're out of time, but I had a blast with the film. I really, really enjoyed this, and I'm highly recommending it to people. I think this is the kind of genre film that it is really a performance piece above all else. That it is something that, you know, if you're looking for something, a thriller, it has that element to it. You'll enjoy it. You'll have a good time with it, but there's actually a lot more that you can sink your teeth into, and it's worthy of revisiting. So congratulations, man. You got a hell of a film here.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate that, man.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was nice to meet you, Stefan. Take care.
Nice to meet you. Take care, man.
Bye-bye.